Love this podcast? Support this show through the supporter feature from Acast. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello and welcome to the Partly Political Broadcast, the podcast that pretends to take a fresh look at politics, but instead just keeps bringing back the same unwanted look again and again, with the hope that you'll eventually cave in and accept it, and then we supposedly move on. This is episode 134, I'm Tin and Duyeb, and once again, by the time you've heard this podcast, MPs will probably have voted against May's deal for the umpteen billionth time, which might have been meaningful or possibly just provisional, maybe emotional or spiritual, but regardless, very likely inconsequential, as Prime Minister and windshield that would only ever hide behind whoever needed to use it, Theresa May, will probably just delay Brexit so that she can keep returning to Brussels with exactly the same plan again and again, like a pet whose owner has died, but they still keep prodding the body in the hope that they'll get fed. I'm obviously not thinking of a cat, they just eat their owner's face. I have no clue at all what's happening with Brexit this week, which puts me on level footing with all political commentators, experts, and in fact politicians themselves, as the country heads towards a week of votes that'd have more obvious direction if the outcome was picked by an iPod shuffle. Over the past week, May and the Attorney General, Jeffrey, my voice has far more depth than I do, Cox, have been at EU HQ trying to negotiate some leeway on the Irish border backstop that they had put in place, because again, Brexit is like a heady decision to get married on a boat in Vegas to someone you've only just met, and then the next day realising that it'll probably take you several years to divorce them, and where are they, and why do you not have your wallet, and where are your shoes, and oh, all of this was such a bad idea. Earlier today, to answer Labour leader and felt llama Jeremy Corbyn's urgent question on Brexit, Brexit minister and 12-year-old boy Robin Walker represented the Prime Minister as she attended Commonwealth Day ceremonies in a desperate attempt to gain insight into what it was like when anyone paid attention to Britain. I have a feeling that by PMQs this week, May will be represented by Number 10's chief mouser, Larry the Cat, who'll just proceed to lick his own arse and still provide more insight than she does. After the ceremony, May flew to Strasbourg to meet President of the European Commission and star of children's cartoon Arthur, Jean-Claude Juncker, and as announced by Chancellor of the Duchy and cosplay estate agent David Lidlington to Parliament, improvements to May's deal were made. What improvements? Well, a joint instrument, which is when you play a tune on a fat reefer. Sorry, I mean it's a legal obligation for the right of the UK to suspend the Irish backstop if the EU don't uphold their side of things. Though telling it a ghost story or a good thriller isn't the same as removing it, is it? Anyway, then the other addition is the legal obligation to replace the backstop with alternative arrangements by December 2020, which, judging by the speed it's taken just to get to this point, will mean it's likely just replaced by a stockade or any other word they found in the thesaurus for backstop. Lidlington warned that not voting for this deal will plunge the country into a political crisis. Mate, where have you been? That's like saying if you don't vote for this deal, things will be equally as dire and yet dull as they have been for the last two or so years. Ooh, terrifying. Is that how you're planning to suspend the backstop, is it? It's not very good. Rumours suggest that if May's deal fails, which it will because everyone still hates it because it's still the same and it's still rubbish, she might still put forward a Brexit delay until the 24th of May, which would be one day past the start of European elections, meaning that Article 50 can't really be extended beyond that without an awful lot of hassle, and then May will turn up and say, hey, here's my deal again and all I've changed is my shoes, and then hope that everyone votes for it because of panic. She's purposefully kicking the can down the road, which is really stupid, as she may need to eat from it if we end up with a no deal. If that is is the case, then everyone will still be unhappy because no one ever likes anything that's happening, and Brexiteer and What Would Happen If a Vampire Bit an Egg, Ian Duncan Smith, has already complained this week that the EU are just laughing in Jeffrey Cox's face, which, I mean, they probably are. There's a man who spent last week referring to the renegotiations as Cox's codpiece, which doesn't make any sense unless he's admitting that they smell of sweaty balls. Of course they're laughing. Over on the opposition side, Jeremy Corbyn has met with Tory MPs to discuss a Norway deal, which would mean a much softer Brexit, but I'm concerned that somehow they'd screw it up and we'd just end up with beer that costs £9 a pint and nothing else. At the Scottish Labour conference, Corbyn said that poverty and climate change are bigger priorities than Brexit. And hey, look, he's not wrong, in a way, as what good is a trade agreement when your whole country is sunk underwater due to melted ice caps? Though I guess that would make a border in the Irish Sea a lot more feasible. But the little teeny-weeny issue is that Brexit makes dealing with both of those things an awful lot harder. It's like saying that navigating the labyrinth is way more important than killing the Minotaur, but we all know that it makes it a whole lot harder to find the exit if you're being chased by a large man with a massive bullhead. The rest of the week's politics mostly felt like Conservative MPs were having some sort of competition to see who could say the very worst thing possible. Well, either that or a lot of aides have been winning tea at the Ritz. Disgraced MP Liam the Disgraced Fox managed to tweet the wrong name of the World Trade Organization, calling it the World Trading Organization. Now, sure, it's not that wrong, but when it's literally your job to deal with things like that, it just once again proves that his political expertise means that his concept of trade probably just involves putting something on a tray and assuming it's done. I bet Fox spends his weekend walking around help-yourself canteens and telling people about all the trading he's doing while spilling tea down his leg. Work and Pensions Secretary and resting disappointed face Amber Rudd referred to Shadow Home Secretary and mushroom Diane Abbott as the racist term coloured woman, something that when called out on, Rudd said she'd been clumsy. You know, that sort of clumsiness that causes hugely outdated racist terms. How many times have you tripped up or stubbed your toe and then thrown out a hate crime? Oh, it happens to the worst of us. In Rudd's defence, maybe she assumes calling someone coloured is actually a compliment on account of all the translucently pale grey people that she has to work with in her party. But before everyone could shout, you see, the Conservatives are the really racist ones, Leader of the Commons and mother, Andrea Leadsom, had already handed everyone all of her beer and suggested to the Commons that Islamophobia was a matter for the Foreign Office. Now, you could interpret that as though she thinks that Muslims can't be British citizens, or you could... No, that is the only way that you can interpret it. Of course, if cases of Islamophobia were handed over to the Foreign Office, Foreign Secretary and giraffe-shaped pastor Jeremy Hunt would probably think it was something to do with the fear of llamas and then say that his wife comes from there. Leadsom's comments came in a week where the Conservatives had to suspend 14 party members over Islamophobic comments in a Facebook group, saying that while the group wasn't officially anything to do with the party, they had immediately acted and suspended those who were members. But then, leaked emails showed that actually party chair and distressed porcupine Brandon Lewis knew about some of them from last year and did absolutely nothing. Hey now, be nice, maybe Lewis was just working out if any of them were suitable to take Leadsom's position if she steps down. Meanwhile, on the other side, Labour peer and worst Game of Thrones character ever, Lord Falconer, has said that anti-Semitism could pose an existential threat to the party, which I assume means that if he does end up in charge of an internal investigation into racism against Jewish people in the party, if he thinks it's there, then it is. Meanwhile, Secretary of State for Northern Ireland and human photobomb Karen Bradley has faced a lot of calls of resignation after stating that security force killings during the Troubles were not crimes, but just people fulfilling their duties in a dignified and appropriate way. Nice one, Karen. Way to help the continued peace in Northern Ireland. Why not next just head west and scribble out Derry on all the signs so it just says London? It's quite clear Karen still has absolutely no clue over the history of Northern Ireland, despite being appointed to her role over a year ago. And I wouldn't put it past her to have just assumed that because they were called the Troubles, it was probably just about an upset tummy or something. So what's the big deal? Bradley apologised for her comments pretty quickly but didn't step down because having absolutely no idea about what you're doing is now a key government hiring policy. But, and it's weird to say this, at least she apologised, which is becoming less and less common despite being the most obvious British value I can think of. Every time the government go on about upholding British values, I'm just amazed that they don't prove they really care by overly apologising about everything and then saying something about the weather. I mean, take another one of the contenders in Don't Conservatives Say the Absolute Worst Things. Yes, what if daytime TV got possessed Esther McVeigh, who tweeted an article that said all EU member states would have to join the euro by 2020 and asked if the public were aware of it and hashtagged it #watchout. Turns out the public were aware as it was from 2014 and it's been widely debunked since as it's a whole load of shit. McVeigh didn't apologise and instead tweeted that even if people didn't agree with the article, can't we all agree that the UK shouldn't join the euro? Yeah, nice one, Esther. Now let's do another one. Can't we all agree that an elected MP shouldn't spout completely untrue things? Otherwise, are we at least able to do the same for you? Hey everyone, did you know Esther McVeigh is composed entirely of the worst comments on Mumsnet? Even if you don't agree with that, can we all agree that she's one of the most awful human beings that there's ever been? Theresa May was accused of having not listened on knife crime by an ex-police chief, and later that week of not listening to Islamophobia claims or Brexit concerns. I'm sure it's very possible that she just can't hear, as her aides only filtered through very old advert slogans. May said all the increased deaths of young people by stabbings was appalling, though that could be because she was hoping to get them through austerity first. Home Secretary and star of Despicable Me, Sajid Javid, demanded more funding for police, possibly to cover up the cuts to funding for a knife crime prevention scheme he'd recently made. Still, if he managed to get more funding for police, but still not quite enough to cover all the cuts that have been made, then the cops could go in insufficient numbers to take on all the kids Javid has let down by his other funding cuts, and when they get arrested, it's suddenly the Ministry of Justice's fault. Basically, as displayed by Andrea Leadsom, the government is one big imaginative delegation group. Luckily, Defence Secretary and little boy that's just scoffed all the E-numbers, Gavin Williamson, has a solution to the issue of knife crime. That's right, get the army involved. That does seem to be Gavin's solution to absolutely everything, and it can only be a matter of time before we find out he's missed diplomatic duties because he's insisted he gets a lift to the airport in a tank, or gets in trouble after he asked some squaddies to shoot his neighbour's cat out of the tree, or has been hospitalised after asking the army to sort out a plumbing issue in his house by grenading it. Meanwhile, independent group sort of leader and unused extra from Channel 4's Humans, Chukwuma Munna, suggested that national conscription was needed to fix knife crime. Yes, great suggestion from a man who went AWOL from his own team. Labour MP and similar to Jesus, just the one from The Big Lebowski, not the Bible, Fiona Onosanya, had her appeal against her conviction for perverting the course of justice turned down. The charge comes after she colluded with her brother to lie about who was driving her car when she was caught speeding. Though, let's be fair, it's not unusual for a current MP to pass the blame onto almost anyone else. Has she thought about joining the Tory party? She really, really should. Challenging the decision, Onosanya, a former practicing solicitor, decided to represent herself but turned up without any notes, which probably didn't help her case when it looked like she was hoping to race through it. A recall petition for her seat in Peterborough could now be in place, which could lead to a by-election. As Onosanya has previously compared herself to Jesus Christ, this would now be the time to find out if her political career can rise again after it's definitely died. Jeremy Hunt confirmed that the Prime Minister would reject a second Scottish independence vote because, you know, she'd never rerun a vote again and again and again until it passed. Ever. Nuh-uh. Never, ever, ever. The Digital Economy Act 2017 kicks in next month, meaning that you will not be able to access commercial porn sites in the UK without an age verification check. However, to make up for it, it will be free for everyone to see the government fucking the country on repeat on the news. Far-right activist Tommy Robinson is the best-funded politician in the UK, which is surprising when he looks like someone stuck a Brillo pad on a turnip. Robinson, real name Stephen Yaxley Lennon, has gained all of his money through donations, which he's used to buy a big house and go on lots of fancy holidays. But to be fair, I'd send him some cash too if I knew it'd definitely mean he stayed indoors more or just fucked off to another country. And lastly, in the US, President and Drowned Orange Ruffy Fish Donald Trump referred to the CEO of Apple, Tim Cook, as Tim Apple during a meeting. This caused wide mocking of the man baby, but let's be fair to Trump, it would be a lot easier if we just called people what they do in their jobs. For example, how about Donald Sex Best? Hey, Parpol Broads, another week, another podcast where I'm wondering why I bothered with a weekly politics show and didn't just do a podcast about, I don't know, refusing to believe in certain chinaware and call it No Such Thing as a Dish, or a less topical politics show about special advisors' mistakes causing the cancellation of foreign aid and call it My Spad Wrote Off Borneo. But no, here I am, once again, trying to work out how to fill an hour of a show without just playing Entry of the Gladiators on repeat and laughing hysterically, although I wouldn't do that anyway because music license costs are pricey. On the plus side, I haven't really watched much news this past week, which is always nice. Instead, I've mostly spent time dealing with my daughter having a cold, which means our flat currently looks like a low-budget Ghostbusters spin-off that absolutely no one wanted. This has also coincided with her perfecting doing an impression of an elephant, which is, I'm not going to lie, it's a very parent thing to say, it's unbelievably adorable, or it was, until the arm trunk that she does coincided with the appearance of a kind of snot rope, and suddenly the tiny noise was an awful lot less appealing. Really disgusting. And I went to see Captain Marvel, which is ace, despite what the internet trolls will tell you, as I know they're usually such a trusted source of critique. The only thing I didn't like about it, though, is that it's set in the 90s, which is seen as retro, and that meant I spent the whole film feeling really, really old. Not really sure how to start an internet campaign about that, but maybe you could have one that's sort of actively happy for more female leads as awesome as Brie Larson, but at the same time doesn't want any films that are set in time periods that remind me that adults are alive today who've never seen a cassette. Ugh, it's really... Just even saying that makes me feel sick. So look, I'm glad you're here for whatever this week's show is, and it's better than last week in that there's a guest and everything, so definitely tried my best. But who knows? Who knows what the content is when there literally is no content right now? Anyway, but before that, thank you tons to Shoreditch Twat, Indie Ricky and Manic Mechanic for your lovely iTunes reviews. God, I really hope those are your real names. I know one of you. I know Indie Ricky is a brilliant independent filmmaker and activist. Well worth checking out on Twitter, but thank you to the three of you. The latter's review, Manic Mechanic, they said that their only complaint was that the bumper volume does your head in. And yes, I am aware that every week the volume of the adverts on this show can be staggeringly louder than the rest of the show, and no, it isn't just some sneaky plot to keep waking you up every time you nod off because I'm being super dull. It sadly isn't actually up to me, and I've worked on making this podcast as loud as it possibly can be using clever things like equalizing and amplifying and a hard limiter and then more amplifier. I don't really know what these mean. There's loads of different buttons on the editing software and I've been shown how to use it, but that doesn't mean I understand it. Anyway, when I upload it to Acast, the pod hosts, it then gets compressed again, and then they add the adverts at a level that I just can't control, and then they're really boomy loud. I've asked them about it, and as yet I've had nothing back. And I know that other podcasts that I'm a fan of, like Talking Politics, which is brilliant, has exactly the same issue. So I'm sorry, Manic Mechanic, but as soon as I can do something about it, I absolutely will. If you too, however, would like to review the show and maybe deduct a star for something that's completely out of my control, then please do so on whichever pod apps you use. Or if they don't do reviews, use one you don't use, which will mean that you're using it and then this instruction becomes pointless. You can also donate to the show, which at the moment is mainly just a way of keeping me fueled in caffeine to survive both parenting and politics. Tonight's announcement didn't happen until 10 p.m. Bloody 10 p.m. You know what time I got up this morning? Later than my wife. She let me sleep in a bit, but she was up at 5:30 and I was up... 7:30. It's quite bad. Anyway, caffeine. That's what you can do. And you can buy me caffeine via ko-fi.com/parpolbro, which I've noticed now also has a commissions option. And I'm not sure what any of you would want to commission me to do. But if you have any... But if you have any ideas to pop in there, sling me some bucks, as they're my preferred four-legged mammal, and also give me some money, and then let me know. And I'm happy for commissions if there's something I could feasibly do. God knows, am I just selling myself? Is this some sort of podstitution? Oh, terrible. Otherwise, you can do a one-off or monthly payment at the Ko-fi, and over at patreon.com/parpolbro, you can just do monthly ones, but any are much appreciated. And of course, if you can't do either, then you're dead to me, and don't be showing your face around here again, or there's going to be trouble. Sorry. I mean, just spread the word on your social medias or your anti-social medias about how much you like the show, and trust me, that is just as good. Right, this week's show, I speak to Cameron Archibald from MMT Scotland, and I ask him about what modern monetary theory is, why we should adopt it, and can I eat it? No, not the last one, but the other two, definitely. Plus, there is a little bit of stuff on the causes of knife crime. Spoiler, not just knives. There's no Brexit fallout, though, because I may as well just shout lottery number predictions at you instead for some similar level of coherent insight into what may happen this week. 42, 7, 5, 89, 4006. And then for your octagon number, choose a goose, and for your magic shape, I pick the outline of unidentifiable roadkill. Fingers crossed that helps. It's definitely going to be better than any Brexit advice I can give this week. If something major does happen, there may be an extra show. Who knows? Who actually knows? Anyway, instead, let's all crack on with this. If I was to say to you that MMT is taking the US by storm, you'd probably assume I was discussing some sort of cool new drug that all them kids are taking in order to get wazzed off their jackboxes while doing disco pumps. But actually, it's pretty much the exact opposite, as MMT is an economic theory. Yes, less dancing, more financing. Modern monetary theory, as my poor understanding of it gathers, is all about countries creating their own currency and debt not really being all that bad. Two things that make me really think that my plan of taking out a massive loan so I could live on an island and draw Tiernan dollars with crayons before announcing my new country is not that bad an idea at all. Well, actually, it is, because apart from many sensible reasons against me doing it, my daughter would definitely eat a lot of my money on account of the crayon taste, and then I'd have to trade in toddler poo, and I can't imagine the foreign exchange being at all that enamoured by it. Sorry, I really went off track there. Basically, money breeds money. Not in the way that if I rub two fivers together, they don't give birth to some little 50p's or anything, but more in the idea that if you put money into the economy, people will have more money to put into the economy. It doesn't seem that difficult to imagine, does it? MMT is cited by Democratic Senator and Al, Bernie Sanders, and US Representative and my new political stan, because, I mean, come on, she's damn amazing, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. And they've both publicly backed MMT, and it takes a hefty place within the Green New Deal, policies designed to help the environment, which, as you know, is even more important than money, because you can't fight a tsunami with £50 notes. Various economists are, of course, critical of MMT, as are right-wing commentators who seem concerned that an economy based on a theory will cause more debt, seemingly ignoring that that is the exact point of it. Yeah, nice one, team. Well done. Yeah, and me eating more cakes will cause me to put on weight, but doesn't mean they're not brilliant. No, wait, that's a terrible analogy. Anyway, MMT is starting to influence economic theory in the UK too, with several of Labour's advisers suggesting elements of it, and many are now citing it as a plausible way that an independent Scotland could thrive. But what is MMT? Would it definitely work? Why don't people refer to it as MMT, like you're having a tasty hot beverage? Well, long-time listeners of this podcast will know that when it comes to economics, I haven't got two pennies to rub together. So, this week, instead of me trying to explain it, I spoke to Cameron Archibald, the co-founder of MMT Scotland. And I asked him to, well, pretty much sell MMT to me, which if it was a joke would be problematic, but it's not, it's an economic, we've been through this. We only had a limited time to chat, so this interview is very much a beginner's guide to what it is, what are the barriers to it working, and why might it work for, say, an independent Scotland. I tried to find criticism online to question Cameron about, but apart from the concerns of hyperinflation, which he addresses, there's not a lot out there. So feel free to write in if you can think of other concerns, and I'll read them out on future episodes, or maybe email Cameron and see if he can respond. But until then, I hope you find this as informative as I did. Here is Cameron. Cameron, you were very kind. You sent me lots of links on what modern monetary theory is. And I think I'm starting to grasp it with my idiot non-economic brain. But if you could, especially for me and for the listeners, explain to me what modern monetary theory is, that'd be appreciated. So what is it? What does it mean?
Well, thanks for having me on. And don't put yourself down. I'm sure anyone who puts their heart to it can understand MMT. Although, that is the big question right now. And for a lot of commentators on economics, when they start off, they don't do the proper reading or academic research on it. And so they make a lot of false assumptions. So let's clear a few things up. MMT is a way of looking at economics that embodies a clear and honest image about how the monetary system really works. It really shows us that countries can reach their full potential when they have their own full control of the currency and central bank. And for what it shows us operationally is that countries that issue their own currency simply spend money into existence. It's worked like this in the US, Japan, China, Canada, and even us in the UK. It's worked like this for the last 50 years. And when you tell someone or explain to someone that money is just created every time the government spends, it really puts them back. It's like, wait, what? Really? You know, and then it leads to the question of, well, what's the point of taxing? You know, wouldn't we just end up like Venezuela or Zimbabwe if money is just created? And to that, I say, well, no. Tax has many roles to play in the economy. But we don't need taxes to help pay for government spending. But we need government spending to help pay our taxes. So those taxes simply remove some of the currency that was already issued by the government to help control inflation. Also, demand for the currency, because you need to pay your taxes in that currency, is what gives it value. The value isn't linked to gold or oil or land or anything else, like many people still think. It's linked to demand. A tax will also have other issues, other roles as well, like redistribution or trying to change social behaviour. But a big role is controlling inflation. But it's not just tax either. The one policy MMT advocates is a job guarantee program, a voluntary job guarantee program. These programs would provide meaningful jobs and a living wage to anyone who voluntarily seeks it. And at the same time, this would help increase our productivity levels and the quality of life we offer. Also, assuming as well, you have other policies in place that help provide a quality of life, like a strong welfare system, or a strong NHS. But also as well, then the big point, which is really important, is MMT helps us understand how the national debt works. So the national debt is largely nothing more than the currency spent by the government that has not yet been taxed back. Another way you might want to imagine it is like a point scoring system in a video game. See the money in your pocket right now? That's the national debt. by wanting to reduce the national debt, what we're essentially saying is we want to reduce the amount of money that's going into the economy, that's in our pockets. But the national debt is actually the private sector savings for individuals, for corporations, for banks and the foreign government. We don't need to scare ourselves into our children paying it off in the future, because all generations do it. Our grandparents pay off the national debt. Our parents do it. We do it too. Our children will do it and their children will do it. It's a normal process of paying off, because we pay it off all the time. Main reason if we ever wanted to reduce the national debt or deficit, it's because of the risk of inflation. And again, as I pointed out earlier, inflation is the kind of the key factor that MTers or MT advocates focus on. The risk of inflation occurs when a country spends beyond its labour, its skills, physical capital, technology, and natural resources. And once we fully use our labour and resources, we can't spend beyond that without causing serious inflationary issues. So that's a kind of a start to MMT. And obviously beyond that, you get into a lot more advanced issues. But I'd say that's probably a good start of understanding what MMT is really about.
So I've got a couple of questions. The first being that I've definitely heard the way of thinking before that for a strong economy, you need to be putting money into it. People need to have money to spend in the economy in order for the economy to grow. So is modern monetary theory kind of the opposite of austerity in some ways?
Yes and no. I think when you look at the grassroots movement of MMT, it very much advocates for people to support spending into the economy, to help grow the economy, and to avoid scaremongering about national debt and deficits, because that's a lot of scaremongering going on just now. But I wouldn't say that always applies, though, because where there is inflationary issues in some countries, MT might say, well, actually, you're spending beyond your resources, you're spending beyond your actual capital and your labour, you need to cut back there. And if there is inflationary issues, then you're going to have to implement some sort of austerity or some sort of measures to help increase your productivity to meet to match these levels. One thing is important to say is MMT isn't a manifesto. MMT doesn't hold political beliefs. It's like wearing a pair of goggles or glasses to see more clearly. The individual person or the country has to make judgment for themselves by looking at what MMT explains to them.
And that's interesting. So it's from the way that you describe it, it's about a balance as well, because obviously, we don't necessarily look at debt as a negative thing, but then there is also, it seems, a point where debt is too much. And it's just about working out when those times are.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it, actually. I mean, when it comes to when you hear two phrases quite often, you hear a lot of parties in the mainstream say we must balance the budget. But for when it comes to MMT, what we say is, no, we need to balance the economy. So we want to have the right debt and deficits level, the right debt and deficit levels to have in order to have a healthy economy that provides full employment for everyone and a decent lifestyle. If we balance the budget, so just having tax equal, the amount of tax to take in equal to spending, then essentially, we're draining assets or we're draining currency from the private sector. And, government debt is not the same as a household debt, because essentially we can pay off our debt over time. It's in our own currency. And the government can just create, as I said, operationally, we create money every single year and every day. But when it comes to household, we can't do that. If we were to print our own currency, if you were to print the currency that's already used right now, the copper would come to our house and say, right, you're in the prison. And, obviously we can't do that. And, when we are drained of our assets, we then have to go and borrow, or we have to sell off what we own as well. And if we start borrowing more, that builds up private debt. And then you create a whole private debt bubble, and then you've got yourself into an economic situation that is just ridiculous. And to put this into perspective, I like to cite the US as an example, because they have a few good examples of what happens when you reduce the national debt. And this isn't even MMT to be precise. This is just a basic fact. So, for example, in 1817 to 1821, I think it was roughly around then, there was a time frame of 5 years where the debt was reduced by 20 to 30%. So at that time, it was about $90 million. And right after that, there was an economic depression that began in 1819. And that happened repeatedly as well between 1823 to 1836. There's a few other years as well. There's also 1880 to 1893. And that time frame of 14 years, they reduced the national debt by half. And that time, it was like $1 billion. But an economic depression began in 1893. And then there's the classic example of 1920 to 1930, when the U.S. reduced the national debt by 36%. I can't remember the exact figure for that. I think it was around $15 billion. 1929, the Wall Street crash. So, and then that was also some other factors as well of overproduction for private businesses as well. But this is evident that when you reduce national debt, you're also draining assets from the private economy. And the only time you should really be doing that is when we're facing serious inflationary issues.
So, earlier you mentioned that various countries do spend their own currency, create and spend their own currency, and you mentioned the UK. I mean, I know that obviously our government has done quantitative easing before. Is that what you mean? But was the issue with that it was just money that was given to banks rather than put into the economy overall? Why was that not modern monetary theory?
So a lot of people think that quantitative easing and printing money is the same thing, but it's actually not. It's essentially quantitative easing is an asset swap, and I wouldn't say it's always very good for anti-recession strategies, basically. QE really involves the banks buying bonds, so that's basically bank assets, in exchange for deposits by the central bank in the commercial system. So, you know, that is basically their crediting reserve account. And this is getting very technical, as you can imagine, but basically, to put it in more simple terms, quantitative easing is really about swapping assets, and it's not the same as what MMT advocates really go for, because MMT really is already just kind of creating new money into the system to help grow the economy, essentially. And that doesn't always work for all countries, because, for example, countries in the Eurozone, for example, or Scotland right now, they don't have control of their central banks or their own currency. So, for example, when the Eurozone crisis happened, they only got permission to really kind of put quantitative easing measures in place because countries had permission from the European Central Bank. And Scotland, that was just kind of really done on our own behalf by the Treasury down south, who then put forward QE operations in place. So for countries that have their own currency and central bank, they can, basically, if you wanted to, spend money into existence, as we do all the time anyway, to help grow the economy. But if you don't have your own central bank or your own currency, then you're going to be in a tight situation to try and figure how you can work around that.
Right. Okay. So, I've got two. That's really helpful. Thank you. Two questions off the back of that. Firstly, is again on the subject of if a country's kind of creating its own money, spending its own money in along with modern monetary theory, how does that work on an international scale with the foreign exchange and the value of currency against other currency? Would it devalue a country's own currency? How would international debt and external debt work like with that?
Well, this is actually a very good point. So again, I raised earlier that a lot of people would say, well, hold on a second, you can't just print money because you'll end up like Zimbabwe, or you end up like the Weimar Republic, or you end up like what's the other country that uses Venezuela, that say, yeah. And that will devalue your currency. But that's not how it works. For example, if you have a free floating currency, which by that I mean you don't match the value of the currency to another currency, then it doesn't devalue against anything. I mean, for example, the UK pound is still worth one UK pound. Can't compare to each other. What the risk is what's compared to other countries if there's inflationary issues. So that again leads to the issue of inflation. But many people may say, but if you try to peg it, then many people, speculators could try and attack it. So then you've got to put things in place to make sure that when speculators start attacking your peg, you can defend it. But MMT basically says, let your currency float. Let it represent the value of your economy, but what you're producing and the demand for it as well. Because when you do that, then you know the real focus is inflation. Again, I've said that quite a lot. It's inflation that is targeted here. And I'll give you an example. So let's compare Japan and Italy right now. Japan has its own currency and it's free floating, its own central bank. Italy does not. Japan right now has interest rates that are very, very low and has almost full employment. Japan right now has one of the highest debts in the world in terms of a percentage of GDP. I think it's like 2 quad trillion yen or something like that. It's something ridiculous. But they have near full employment. The quality of life is still rising. I think they have some of the best quality of life in the world. And when it comes to investors, they don't have high interest rates, or should I say high yields, when it comes to investing in the economy. And investors still purchase government bonds. But when you look at Italy, for example, there's people who want to invest into the economy offer really high yields and high interest rates to invest. And the simple truth to that is, it's because Japan, because they own their own currency, can almost always guarantee to pay back investment they've received with interest to Japanese investors. And that's the power of a currency. It can almost make or break an economy.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
And we'll be back with Cameron in a minute, but first, you know what they say, knives don't kill people, people kill people, just mostly by using knives. The big argument right now is around what is causing the 2/3 increase in knife crime in the UK since 2014, with accusations and pointed fingers looking at everything from maybe we should just ban all knives and just spoon butter onto bread, all the way to what about if we surgically attach mittens to all the teenagers, with everyone taking a stab at who's to blame. Stab. Last week, in her infinite ridiculousness, Theresa May denied that there were any links between austerity or a reduction in police numbers and the increase in illegal blade activity. Yes, she's denied that the government making a lot of unnecessary cuts that ruin people's lives have anything to do with it. While there are many studies that show that stop and search, as is being called for by Home Secretary Sajid Javid, don't reduce crime and are in fact discriminatory, the police cuts of 19% across the board and 21,000 fewer officers mean that they have reduced safer neighbourhood teams, whose job it was to know the streets and families in the areas that they patrolled, and they could use trust and familiarity to warn kids away from criminal activity. Very useful, like Dixon of Dot Green, but you know, known by people who aren't ancient and really old.
Police officers are now disproportionately dealing with cases involving people with mental health issues, left uncared for due to cuts to social care. The expulsion rates in school has risen by 15%, with 50% of those pupils being expelled having mental health issues, as schools can no longer afford the support staff or time to work with them, or risk low test scores in case it affects classroom funding. Spending on youth services has been cut by 62% since 2010, and overall, politicians don't even want to listen to kids when they're upset about climate change, let alone their unlikeliness to ever own a house or afford to have less than a few jobs or work abroad or so much more. I mean, when you really think about it, are these kids carrying knives in preparation for a post-Brexit dystopian future that they're all too aware of? Will they be the only ones able to rule in gangs with monopolies on tinned goods, while ours middle-aged folk running around waving wooden spoons and hoping for the best? Then, of course, there are cuts to the court systems, meaning legal aid is denied to many who don't get a fair trial, while broken draft excluder Chris Grayling's obviously failed, rehabilitation programmes mean that reoffending has actually risen since they were implemented, probably because they involve telling criminals how bad things are on the outside, and then they realise in the inevitable post-Brexit purge they'd probably be safer in a cell. Then there's the rise in child poverty and the lack of support for struggling families, and that selling drugs is more likely to benefit your bank account than doing an unpaid workfare job in Poundland where all you're doing is cleaning up the liquid from broken snow globes. Look, all I'm saying is austerity is definitely a factor, and giving extra funding to the police is only one part of many, many repairs that need doing. Like assuming one plaster over a paper cut will save a victim with multiple stab wounds. Javid has asked for a £15 million fund for a short-term boost in police officers. Because, as you know, it's obvious, you fix it once, it'll never come back, right? It's the glandular fever of crimes, yeah? But Javid was denied that money by Chancellor and the only person who can frown with their entire body, Philip Hammond, who said that the police have enough money and should just divert cash from other budgets, like, you know, one of those goofy cartoons where he pops his finger over a leak in a pipe as another pops up elsewhere, and so on and so on. Brilliant. Why don't the cops just put all their cash into fighting knife crime, and then when there's an increase in car theft and, I don't know, pet arson, then they'll cover those areas until knife crime comes back? What it requires is the government to realise that all of society needs a lot more TLC, because there's no easy solutions to this. If young people are unhappy with no future prospects, you can stop and search them and ban all the knives you like, but before you know it, there'd be an increase in spoon violence, and then spatula violence, and then children dying from cake cester attacks, and so on, and so on, and so on. There is a much deeper problem here that needs to be dealt with. The Conservatives really can't just be searching for random solutions, as it's a pretty insensitive time for them just to be taking a stab in the dark. And now, back to Cameron. So, you're an advocate for an independent Scotland, and this modern monetary theory has been around for a while, but it's suddenly become quite popular in the US. But it requires an independent country, as you said, sort of being outside of the Eurozone, something like that. So, is the UK in a better place to implement this post-Brexit? Or would Scotland only still be able to implement this in an independent situation? How can this work?
Well, I'll quickly say just now about its growing popularity. I think the popularity of it has to come down to the US, especially the grassroots movement mayor. And again, a special shout to who's seen as the queen of MMT, I would say, Stephanie Kelton. Stephanie Kelton is the advisor to Bernie Sanders and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. And when they advocate for Medicare for All, free education and a job guarantee scheme, when she shares, Stephanie Kelton, should I say, shares that spotlight with them. And when they see Bernie Sanders and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, they see Stephanie Kelton. And that's where the whole thing basically kicked off. And right now you've got two academic titans, Professor Paul Krugman and Stephanie Kelton, debating it out right now in the US. We've not seen something like that since, John Maynard Keynes and Friedrich Hayek. It's such a high-quality debate. And that's sipped into the UK. That's why it's suddenly, really grown here. And I'd say it really kicked off down south with the Government Initiative for Modern Monetary Studies, also known as GIMS, to help raise awareness in the down south in the UK. And now it's reached Scotland too. And I know I'm a little off track here, but I'll say one more thing on this. And it's since it was International Women's Day yesterday, I think it's a bit worth pointing out that GIMS was founded completely by women, which I think is amazing, because the MMT movement, the academia world of economics really lacks female voices, but the MMT movement has such amazing diversity when it comes to advocating for having your own currency in the central bank, because so many people coming around the world are coming to get involved. Now, you asked about can you implement MMT post-Brexit better or not. That's quite interesting. And again, MP doesn't have a position on Brexit or Scottish independence. If it's up to me to argue why I believe Scotland should have its own currency post-independence, not MMT. And I use MMT as a tool for that. So I'll start off with Scottish independence. Basically, this is the difference between Scotland. When it becomes independent, we can be a currency issuer or we can be a currency user. And that difference is really important. By being a currency issuer, we can properly spend on government programs that help support the most vulnerable in society and grow our economy for everyone. But if you become a currency user by keeping sterling after independence, which is controlled by the Bank of England, we're handing over our monetary powers to bankers in the rest of the UK. And that would be leaving powers over interest rates, borrowing, and the money supply in the hands of the UK. And, that doesn't really work in Scotland's favour. If we want to take a different economic approach, then how does keeping sterling work? And this is in criticism which we've put forward with those in the MMT movement towards the SNP Sustainable Growth Commission. The Growth Commission is a commission that looked at the case of Scottish independence, and basically last year it opened its opened its doors and went, right, here is our ultimate plan. It's a very big paper, so I'm not going to go over all of it, but essentially it says that we're going to keep the UK sterling until we know Scotland's ready to implement our own currency, and we have to meet six key tests. But the problem with these six key tests is that's been proposed by the Sustainable Growth Commission is they can only really be met if we have our own currency first. So, for example, one of the tests is building up foreign exchange reserves, basically. So having good backup in our bank of other people's currencies in case, for trading and in case of emergency. The problem is, if we don't have our own central bank of currency first, then we don't need to build up foreign currency exchange reserves. That's not required. And the government might get lazy and go, well, we don't have our own central bank anyway, so what's the point? And that means we fail on that test. If Scotland wants to really open up its opportunities in the future, then the power of the currency is absolutely key. And you also talked about Brexit there as well. Is MMT better or can be used post-Brexit?
I should say that obviously I'm aware that the UK isn't part of the Eurozone as such, but I wondered if the localisation or nationalisation of Brexit would make it easier to implement such a thing.
So when it comes to MMT and Brexit and the Eurozone, MMT can be used anywhere because it's again a pair of goggles. That's not a policy. So let's just say, for example, right now in the Eurozone, you don't have control of your central bank and currency, but one of the rules of being in the Eurozone is you have to have a deficit of just 3% and under. But let's just say that's absolutely fine. Let's say that the country needs only a 3% deficit and it's quite adequate where it's at just now, and it can, enjoys free movement of people, enjoys all the benefits of trading within the EU and out with the EU. That's absolutely fine. But that, again, wearing the MMT goggles, it shows that in the situation you are in the Eurozone, that's great. Even if you have less monetary sovereignty, you're in an okay position. But if your position is that you need a higher deficit spending and you need to properly employ your population, then you've got to think about other ways you can do that. And you can think about possibly just, countries in the Eurozone break deficit rules all the time. Germany and France definitely being guilty of that, and they're the big advocates of keeping those rules. So you could be cheeky and break that rule, or you can find alternative solutions. But it's not up to me to tell other countries what to do. It's up to them what they want to do. Whatever suits their needs, they can follow. But the thing is, and I think this is very important as well, is how do you know what suits your needs? And this is one of the issues when it comes to implementing the vision, the goggles for MMT, because people, you need to be properly informed. And when you have groups like the Taxpayers Alliance, for example, who tell you that you need to pay your taxes so we can spend stuff, that's just not true, and that does not properly inform the people, citizens, about how their systems work. And therefore, if not properly informed, how can they make properly informed decisions? How can they properly wear the MMT goggles? And when we face similar things from, you know, from other groups in Scotland as well, that are not just like right-wing or anti-MMT, but also, you know, some unionist groups as well. Although it's worth pointing out, unionist groups can also be pro-MMT. And if they're pro-MMT, that would be very interesting to see one pro-MMT independence group against a pro-MMT unionist group. But we haven't seen that yet, but if that happened, I'd be very interested to see how that goes. Okay, but back to topic. The one, if you want to implement the goggles for MMT, then we have to better inform the public and businesses about how the monetary system works. And once those facts are established, citizens then can have a higher quality debate and discussion to help the most vulnerable in society and help grow the economy for everyone. And then that means we can have better discussion on implementing the job guarantee. Because then citizens will go, right, we know what we have to do. We know how we have to fully utilise our resources and labour. So let's get together and figure this out. So this is actually something me and my colleague Craig Berry are working on just now. We're doing a paper on the job guarantee. And whilst I'm not going to give too many details on that, because I want to keep my cards close to my chest, I will say that we do have one design for it. And it's basically the participatory democracy design. And what that is essentially is that you'd create local assemblies for your local area, and those local assemblies would get them together and go, right, what do we need to fix our area? What are the social and economic issues that are at play here that we need to develop? They discuss it, they highlight maybe multiple different factors, and then you split into committees that look at different areas. Those committees would then go out, they would meet experts, they would gather data, they'd gather the requirements they need to try and implement the jobs that they want for the local area. And then we come back together, and if there's enough jobs and proposals there for everyone, they implement it and they give the green light to it. And if there's not, then the local assembly will vote on which ones they want. And the good thing about this is that even though it's happening locally, the state, they'll hand the proposals to the state, the government, the national government, and they'll go, right, you've done the work, you're going to use labour and resources, there's not any serious inflation issues here, we'll fund this for you entirely. And what's amazing about that is that it offers not just political capital, economic capital to citizens, and that's what I love about the job guarantee as well, because it has the potential to offer inspiration and empower citizens to get fully involved with what's happening in the world around them. And that's one of the big reasons why I got involved with MMT, because it just offers so much potential for the future, and it can work for any movement if you apply it correctly.
Many thanks to Cameron for having time to explain MMT to me for the podcast. You can find Cameron on Twitter at Mammoth Whale, and his mostly economics blog is at mammothwhale.wordpress.com. And you can find MMT Scotland on Twitter at MMT Scotland and online at, guess what, mmtscotland.com. Surprise! As I mentioned in the intro to our chat, we were on a limited time schedule, so I messaged Cameron afterwards to send me some recommendations for follows on the subject, and he suggested the MMT Don, Stephanie Kelton, who's on Twitter under her name, the Deficit Owls, who are on Facebook, and aim to explain MMT in clear and easily understandable way, and the MMT podcast, which is hosted by a very funny comedian, Christian Riley, with Patricia Pino. And they can be found on all pod apps, much like this show, because sometimes, just sometimes, the internet makes life an awful lot easier. Thanks very much to Matthew for emailing me to recommend Cameron. And after last week's absence of guests due to Chris Grayling's fault, definitely, I am very much in need of more ideas of who to interview in upcoming shows. So let me know. What policies, theories, initiatives, campaigns, ideologies, or politically named dance moves shall I interview someone about, and who? Drop me a line at PartPodBro on Twitter, the Partly Political Broadcast on Facebook, the contact page on partlypoliticalbroadcast.co.uk, or email me at partlypoliticalbroadcast@gmail.com. as Matthew did. Or, like Living Fossil, the dinosaur ant, you could release a chemical alarm signal by secreting pheromones from your glands. And then either I'll catch a whiff and be sick, or, I'll know exactly who you want me to interview. Or, more likely, you just embarrass yourself, and then a ton of large queen ants will try and hump your legs. As always, it's just much easier to email, isn't it? that's all for this week's Partly Political Broadcast. Thanks again for listening. Though really, I mean, this moment is just an exercise in how many words a man can say about nothing at all happening. Hey-ho, who knows, this time next week you could be listening to a Parpol Bro that's actually about something. Anyway, as I said, thanks for listening. Please donate to the Ko-fi or Patreon if you can. Review the show and not the adverts on your pod apps of choice. And please do tell other people to listen in, or maybe even just allude to it in a teaser trailer sort of way, so that they spend ages searching the internet and instead end up subscribing to the Pally Petri broadsword and never stop thanking you for it. Yeah, cheers, and that's Acast for collating this show and its noise display. Big cheers to my brother, The Last Skeptic, for all the musicy bits, and much thankings to Cat Day for typing up the linear liner notes every single week. This will be back next week when Theresa May tells Parliament she's made an important improvement to her deal in time for the third reading, only for MPs to discover that all she's done is made all the dots on the I's little smiley faces, and it fails again. Bye. This week's show is sponsored by Gavin Williamson's Army Fixes. Have you got a problem? Let Gavin send in the army to take care of it. No problem too small, no ego boost too big. Creaky floorboards? We've got IEDs that'll get rid of those in no time. Ant infestation? Well, you know what ants don't like? That's right, flamethrowers right in their stupid tiny faces. Guy at work being a dick? We'll have him stripped naked with a bag over his head and some embarrassing photos of us waterboarding him within minutes. Gavin Williamson's Army Fixes. Be the best at a variety of menial tasks.